Welcome to this edition of Back to Basics with Pastor Brian Broderson.
The big question as we consider death and the grief that it causes is, who can bring an end to this wrongness, this thing that's just so wrong? And, you know, the truth of the matter is, it's already been done. And the story right here, among other stories in the Bible, tell us that it's Jesus who has put things right.
Today on Back to Basics, Pastor Brian continues his series, Jesus Encounters. Join us as Pastor Brian begins his teaching on John chapter 11, verses 1 through 44, as he examines an encounter between Jesus and those who grieve. Now, here's Pastor Brian.
So we continue on today with our Jesus Encounters series. And just to remind some of you, for others, maybe you're not aware, but what we're doing with the series is we're looking at Jesus and his dealings with people and those people and their encounter with the Lord. And we're looking at them as kind of examples. So we're looking at them, but we're sort of looking beyond them as well to see how they represent the different, you know, experiences that we ourselves would have in life. And so as we see how Jesus dealt with them and ministered to them and helped them and answered them, then we see how the Lord ministers to us today as well. So our title today for this message is Jesus and Those Who Grieve, because of course we have the story here of the two grieving sisters, Martha and Mary. So that's kind of the background for our teaching here. Now, no one disagrees that there's something wrong with the world. Actually, most people, of course, agree that there are many things wrong with the world. Yet out of all that's wrong in the world, there's nothing we sense to be more wrong than death. And there's nothing that's caused more grief than death. And of course, that has just been the case from the very beginning, and it never changes. You know, the interesting thing when you think about death, you know, as human beings, we adapt pretty well to things. And, you know, you would think that, you know, even very difficult things, eventually you adapt to them. But death is the one thing that we never do adapt to, in the sense that we never just accept that it is what it is. It always seems so wrong to us. Just this past week, I had the opportunity to meet with a man from India. And he's involved in a ministry in India that includes churches and Bible schools, but it also includes orphanages. And he was telling me they have, out of four orphanages, they have 650 children that they minister to. 450 of them are HIV positive. All of the children that are HIV positive will eventually die of complications. Due to that, they will eventually die, basically, of AIDS. And as he's telling me about this orphanage ministry, he showed me the picture. He was also telling me about his son, who was planning to come on the trip but was unable to come. And the reason he couldn't come is because there was a 12-year-old boy that was in those final stages of life, and he really felt responsible to be there with this young boy. But as he was telling me the story, he showed me some pictures of this boy. And, you know, here's just this beautiful young boy and, you know, just bright, shiny, smiley face. And then I see another picture of him as he begins to be more emaciated as the disease, you know, takes its effect on him. And then the next picture is a picture of his body lying wrapped in a shroud, like the shroud that Lazarus would have been wrapped in. And then the final picture is his body being placed on the funeral pyre. They don't bury bodies in the ground there. They burn their bodies on, you know, a stack of wood. And as I just walked through that story and those pictures with him, I just thought that very thing of how wrong this is, how sad. And even though I didn't know the child at all, there was just this moment of grief that swept across me, because that's what we do in the face of death. The big question as we consider death and the grief that it causes is, who can bring an end to this wrongness, this thing that's just so wrong? Who can bring an end to it? Who could ever put things right to where we don't have to have this experience of grief any longer? And, you know, the truth of the matter is, it's already been done. And the story right here, among other stories in the Bible, tell us that it's Jesus who has put things right. And what we see in this story is what Jesus did then, but it's also a picture, a prophetic picture of what he will ultimately do in regard to those who die and those who grieve. So what I want to do, as we've been doing here, I want to just sort of walk us through the text, and there are a number of different things I want to look at. And what I want to start with, though, is looking at something that comes out here in the story that we don't always think so much about, but what comes out in the story is a picture of both the deity of Jesus and the humanity of Jesus. Now, the Bible teaches that Jesus is the God-man, meaning that he is fully God and he's also simultaneously fully human. He's not part God and part man. He's not God in the disguise of a man, but he is fully God, and at the same time, he is fully man. Now, one of the reasons why it's important to understand that is because it helps us understand his compassion and his mercy and his ability to be compassionate with us. You know, the author of the letter to the Hebrews, he said, concerning Jesus, speaking of him as our high priest, who is the one who mediates for us, he says, we do not have a high priest who cannot sympathize with our weaknesses. But you see, if he wasn't really a man, that would be the case. He wouldn't be able to sympathize with our weaknesses. When I was a really young Christian, I sort of thought that, well, you know, the suffering of Jesus probably wasn't all that bad for him, because after all, he was God. And as God, he's not going to be affected like I would if I was to die by crucifixion. I didn't realize at that young stage in my walk with the Lord, I didn't realize that, no, Jesus was fully human and he experienced things in a fully human sense. And like I said, this comes out in this story, and it comes out in his dealings with these two sisters, with Martha and Mary. And what we're going to see is that with Martha, it's more of his deity. Divinity is another word for deity. It's more of his divinity that comes through, or we see that. But with Mary, we see more of his humanity. But just for a quick second, let me just talk about this just a little bit more. So when we talk about the humanity of Jesus, the scriptures teach us that Jesus was, you know, like we are. There are myths and legends that talk about, you know, Jesus as a baby, the assumption that, you know, even as a baby, he knew everything and he could talk, you know, straight from the womb. And these are myths for sure. The New Testament, Luke's gospel, for example, tells us that Jesus grew in wisdom and he grew in stature. So he grew in wisdom, just like we would go through that natural process of growth and mental development and so forth. Jesus went through the same thing because he was a human being. We read in the story about the encounter with the woman at the well. We read that Jesus was tired. We read that he was hungry. We know that he fasted 40 days and 40 nights, and after that, he was hungry. So point is, he was human. He was thoroughly human. But of course, he was also divine. He was also God. He was God in human flesh, not God disguised as a man. And when I say God disguised as a man, that would mean that, well, he just looked like he was a man, but he wasn't really a man. No, Jesus was fully a man, but he was also fully God. In the Bible, we have both indirect and direct references to the deity of Christ. I say that because some people say, you know, some people say Jesus wasn't fully human. Other people say, well, he wasn't really God. He was, some cults teach that he was, you know, something in between, like an angel or something like that. But we have indirect references in Scripture that tell us that he must be God. He has to be God. And then we have the very straightforward statements of Jesus himself claiming to be God. Let me give you a quick example of an indirect reference. As you're reading through the Gospels, you will find that Jesus says to people, your sins are forgiven you. Now, this created a problem even in his own day, because when he would say that, the religious leaders would immediately ask this question, who does this man think he is? For God alone can forgive sins. And that's true. Only God can forgive sins, because sins are ultimately against God. He's the one who established the laws. So how is it that Jesus can forgive sin? Well, the conclusion has to be that he's God. Yes, it was true that only God could forgive sins. It was also true that Jesus was God. So that's just one indirect reference. But then let me give you a couple of more direct references from this gospel. In the 8th chapter, the 58th verse of John, Jesus is in a contentious conversation with the religious leaders of the day. He talks about Abraham, and he says this. He says, Abraham rejoiced to see my day. He saw it and was glad. They said to him, you're not even 50 years old. How can you say that you know, that Abraham knows anything about you? Abraham lived, you know, 1,800 to 2,000 years before this. And Jesus said this. He said, before Abraham was, I am. Jesus didn't say before Abraham was, I was. He said, I am. And what he did right there is he took to himself the name of God. Now in Exodus chapter 3, when we have the record of Moses encountering God at the burning bush, maybe you remember reading it, Moses says to God, when God says, I want you to go to Pharaoh, I want you to go tell him to let my people go, Moses says, who do I say sent me? And the Lord says, say, I am, has sent you. Jesus, when he says, before Abraham was, I am, he takes the very exact same name with the exact same words. John records it in Greek. The Jews would have used the Greek version of the Old Testament. They would be very familiar with it. Jesus unequivocally claims that he is God. Later on, chapter 10, and by the way, John is the one who really emphasizes the deity of Christ. Even though the other writers refer to it, John seemed to have wanted in his time to make sure that everybody understood that Jesus was no one less than God the Son, the second person of the Trinity, equal to the Father. But in the 10th chapter, Jesus said to the religious leaders who were attempting to stone him, he said, many good works I've shown you from the Father. For which of these good works are you stoning me? And they said, we're not stoning you for any good work. We're stoning you for blasphemy, because you, being a man, make yourself God. So you see, they understood. So even though some modern so-called theologians don't understand that Jesus claimed to be God, the people in his day understood it, and for that they sought to stone him. So Jesus, here in the story, we see both his deity and his humanity. Now, as I said, in his dealings with the two sisters, these two aspects of his nature come out. So let's look first at his dealing with Martha. And as he deals with Martha, we're going to see that it's more of the deity, in the sense that what he does with Martha is he speaks truth to Martha. What he does with Mary is different. He doesn't really speak anything to Mary. You know what he does instead? He just enters into her sorrow. He enters into her grief. So for Martha, he speaks truth. For Mary, he kind of speaks tears, as Tim Keller put it. That was the way that he spoke. And so as we see with Martha, and really quick before we jump into this, let me just say, Martha and Mary, who appear here, and we see them interacting with Jesus, there's another place in the Gospels where we also see another interaction with Jesus. And I think it's important to understand their personality in the background. Luke tells us another story about these two sisters. And what he tells us is that there's a certain time where Jesus goes into their home and he's there teaching. And Martha, she is off in the kitchen, presumably, you know, dealing with dinner or cleanup or whatever. And Mary is sitting down at the feet of Jesus and she's listening to him talk. And at a certain point, Martha comes in angry. She bursts in and she says, "Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me to do all the work?" And Jesus says, "Martha, you're worried and distracted about many things. Mary has chosen the better part and it's not going to be taken from her." So that's kind of the backdrop for the two women and their different personalities. So Martha, and I keep mixing these names up all the way through. A lady told me after second service, she said, "I think you got them mixed up." I said, "Yes, I think I did, many times." So if I'm saying Mary when I mean Martha, you get it. You know what I'm talking about. So, but we are talking about Martha here, right? So as we pick up the story, let's pick up in verse 17. We read it together. Lazarus, Mary, they called, "Come, the one you love is sick." Jesus delayed. Lazarus died. Jesus said he's asleep. So we pick up in verse 17. "So when Jesus came, he found that he had already been in the tomb 4 days. Now Bethany was near Jerusalem. It was about 2 miles away. And many of the Jews had joined the women around Martha and Mary to comfort them concerning their brother. Now Martha, as soon as she heard that Jesus was coming, went and met him, but Mary was sitting in the house. Now Martha said to Jesus," and I think it was in this tone, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. But even now, I know that whatever you ask of God, he will give you." Martha, like her personality was, she met Jesus, and I think very confrontationally at this point. I mean, after all, they sent a message to Jesus much earlier, but he didn't come. And so Martha she's upset. And, you know, just on a bit of a side note here, one of the things this shows us is that God can handle us being upset. You know, it's okay. There are times when our circumstances are such that, you know, we might just feel like, you know, "Lord, I don't get this." And we have biblical precedent for it. The psalmist said stuff like that many, many times over. Jeremiah the prophet, on one occasion, he says, "Lord, you tricked me. You know, you fooled me into doing this. And I'm never going to speak in your name again. That's it. I'm done." And of course, he moved on from that. But my point is, you know, Mary is not happy here with Jesus. "Lord, if you would have been here, my brother wouldn't have died." So Jesus said to her, "Your brother will rise again." And Martha said to him, "I know that he will rise again in the resurrection at the last day." Jesus said to her, "I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me, though he may die, he shall live. And whoever lives and believes in me shall never die. Do you believe this?" She said, "Yes, Lord, I believe that you are the Christ, the Son of God, who is to come into the world." So here we see Jesus. He is addressing Mary with truth. And when we're talking about grief and we're talking about those who are suffering grief, of course, we need to speak truth. Now, it's important that we speak it in the right tone, and it's also important that we speak it at the right time. You know, sometimes I talk to people who are going to maybe attend a funeral, a memorial service, or I talk to somebody who knows that somebody close is dying and they're probably going to be there as that transpires. And they often say to me, they say, "You know, I don't know. I just feel so awkward because I don't know what to say." You know what? I'm right with you. I don't know what to say. But you know what I tell them? Don't say anything. You don't necessarily have to say anything. Now, there sometimes, you know, you do say something and there's a time and a place to say something. But it just depends on the circumstance. It depends on the people. In a second, Jesus is dealing with Mary is different than it is with Martha. Jesus doesn't really say anything, but he says something to Martha because of her disposition. Martha needed to be reminded of the truth. And oh, what a great truth. I'm really glad that Jesus spoke to Martha. I'm really glad that she approached him in this way because it gave Jesus the opportunity to say in what is, in my opinion, the most profound thing Jesus ever said. And that's a pretty serious statement there because Jesus said many, many profound things. But to me, to say this, I am the resurrection and the life. You know, Martha, she's thinking, she's of course Jewish. She knows from the scriptures there's going to be a resurrection someday way out in the future. Who knows how long that's going to be? She says, Lord, I know my brother's going to rise again then. Jesus says, Martha, you don't get it. I'm the resurrection. It's not this event that's going to happen out there that's going to raise your brother. It's me that's going to raise your brother. And when that event does happen out there, it's going to happen because of me. And what a profound thing. Who has ever said anything like this? Nobody has ever said anything like this. And because of the things that Jesus said and because of this particular thing Jesus said, it was C.S. Lewis who popularized the what's called the trilemma. The trilemma being that Jesus, when you're faced with the person of Jesus, you can't just accept him as was common in Lewis's day and as is still common today. You can't just accept him as like a good teacher or like a philosopher, somebody who had a great moral perspective. He's either God or he's none of those things. So the trilemma is that he is either a liar, he is a lunatic, or he is the Lord. It's one of the three. And if he's not the Lord, then he's something else. He's a liar or a lunatic. Because you couldn't say he's a good teacher if he lied about things, which he would have been lying if he wasn't really the Lord, right? You couldn't say if he's a good teacher just if he was a lunatic. So Jesus here makes claims that no one else has ever made. I am the resurrection and the life. He speaks truth to Martha. Now, let's go to Mary. So as we go to Mary, and we'll pick up in verse 32, then when Mary came where Jesus was, she and saw him, notice a different posture. She fell down at his feet. So Martha seems to come confrontationally, sort of a, you know, standing there with Jesus. Why didn't you come? Mary comes and she falls at his feet. In a sense, it's kind of their personalities, right? Mary's in the kitchen. She's doing all the work. Mary's sitting at the feet of Jesus. You know, many times, if you're teaching on Moses, you have a tendency to call him Noah. Teaching on Noah, you're always calling him Moses. That kind of stuff drives me crazy. And sometimes I hear people on the radio, they're teaching on Moses and they keep calling him Noah. Or they're teaching on Noah and they keep calling him Moses. And I hear him and I think, gosh, those guys, can't they get it right? And then guess what? I hear myself on the radio, I'm doing the same thing. I'm like, how did I do that? Martha and Mary, it's two M's, so it's kind of easier to mix them up. But with Mary, so she falls down at his feet saying to him, Lord. Now look, notice, she says the same thing. Lord, if you had been here, my brother wouldn't have died. But I think her tone was different. I mean, she's at the feet of Jesus. She's just like she always is. You know, it's almost like Mary, her personality is a personality that needs an explanation. You know, some people are like that. Some people need an explanation and some people don't need an explanation. They just need someone to enter into their experience with them. And so we see Jesus doing both things here. And this is where we see his humanity. So look what happens. So Jesus, when he saw her weeping and the Jews who came with her weeping, he groaned in the spirit and was troubled. And he said, where have you laid him? And they said, Lord, come and see. Verse 35, Jesus wept. Jesus wept.
For the month of February, Back to Basics Radio is offering a book titled, Why Grace Changes Everything by Chuck Smith. Have you ever thought about the simple phrase, God loves you? This just might be the most important truth you could ever grasp, that God has called us into a loving relationship with himself. Unfortunately, many of us have been brought up to think that we need to earn God's love. In Chuck Smith's book, Why Grace Changes Everything, Pastor Chuck imparts years of wisdom from his own experiences, how he thought he had to work hard and deny his own desires for God to love him. But when he unlocked the secret of God's grace, this changed everything he ever thought about God. come discover the book Why Grace Changes Everything by Pastor Chuck Smith. It's our gift to say thank you for your donation to Back to Basics. So we encourage you to call us right now at 1-800-733-6443. And don't forget to visit backtobasicsradio.com, where you can find more resources or sign up for Pastor Brian's free email devotional. We'd also like to remind you that all of our other resources are waiting for you at backtobasicsradio.com or by calling our request line at 1-800-733-6443. That's 1-800-733-6443. Our desire is to encourage you in your daily walk with God. We'll continue next time with more valuable insights from Pastor Brian as we continue our series, Jesus Encounters. Back to Basics is the preaching and teaching ministry of Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, California.